Welcome to Come to the Brink. I'm Zoe Flowers, and this is a space for those of us navigating profound life changes like loss, trauma, caregiving, and transformation. It's about what happens when everything you thought was solid crumbles beneath you and you're forced to rebuild. If you've ever felt like you're standing on the brink, this is the space for you. Welcome. So it is not necessarily an overland and arduous journey to go home. Yet, I do not want to make it seem that it is simplistic, for there is much resistance to going home, no matter if it is easy or hard. There is one more way to understand women's delaying the return. One that is far more mysterious, and that is a woman's over-identification with the healer archetype. Now, an archetype is an enormous force that is both mysterious and instructive to us. We gain great stores by being near it, by emulating it to some extent, by being in balanced relationship to it. Each archetype carries its own characteristics that supports the name we give the archetype: the great mother, the divine child, the son, hero, and so forth. The great healer archetype carries wisdom, goodness, knowing, caregiving, and all the other things associated with the healer. So it is good to be generous and kind and helpful like the great healer archetype, but only to a point. Beyond that, it exerts a hindering influence on our lives. Women's heal everything, fix everything compulsion is a major entrapment constructed by the requirements placed upon us by our own cultures, mainly pressures to prove that we are not just standing around taking up space and enjoying ourselves, but that we have redeemable value in some part of the world. It is fair to say, to prove that we have value and therefore should be allowed to live. These pressures are introduced into our psyches when we are very young and unable to judge or resist them. They become law to us unless or until we challenge them. But the cries of the suffering of the world cannot all be answered by a single person all the time. We can truly only choose to respond to those that allow us to go home on a regular basis. Otherwise, our heart lights dim to almost nothing. When the heart wishes to help is something different from what the heart's resources be. If a woman values her soul's skin, she will decide these matters according to how close she is to and how often she has been home. So as usual, that was an excerpt from Women Who Run With the Wolves from Dr. Picola. Dr. Picola Estes, PhD. Sorry, Dr. Clarissa. Edit. Clarissa Pinkola Estes, PhD. There we go. So welcome back to The Brink. I am Zoe Flowers, and this is the place where we tell the truth about what breaks us, what remakes us, what it takes to keep going when life drags you to the edge, and like the book excerpt said, and how we find our way back home. This is where we meet the parts of ourselves we've avoided, the parts we've abandoned, and the parts that are still here waiting for us, even when we think we're out of time, out of breath, or out of courage. Because the brink isn't a place of ending, it's a place of transformation. And no one should be on the brink alone. So today I am talking about something that kind of came as a surprise to me, I guess. It's one of those surprises you know is coming, but you know, you don't really think about it until it's there or till it's been around for a while. So the surprise we're talking about today is menopause. Yet another thing that many of us just don't talk about, right? Something that, I don't know, I avoided for years. And I think the reason I avoided it is because I didn't really think I had many symptoms to it. So I kind of just glided, I guess, a harsh glide, but a glide nonetheless. And so for years, you know, as you know, I've talked about for the past year on this podcast, for the past 4 years or so, I was fully consumed by caretaking my mom through dementia, cancer, and then her eventual passing last year. So I've said over and over again, and I've talked to so many people on this podcast about all the ways we lose ourselves when we're caregiving, whether we're moms or taking care of aging parents or our social activists, you know, working on behalf of others, working on this cause or that cause. We lose ourselves. We abandon ourselves, right? And then it's like, before we know it, we look up, our hair is falling out or it's thin. Our health is declining. Our sleep is interrupted. Our pleasure is like, what's that? Or if we do have it, it feels fleeting. Or if we do have it, especially if we're caregiving, we feel guilty. Same with our desire. Same with our bodies. It just goes, right? But it doesn't just go. We help it. So I didn't really have the energy to think about what was happening inside of me because all my energy was tied to literally keeping my mother alive as best I could, right? Trying to get her to stop smoking, trying to get her to stop drinking, trying to get her to take her medications, you know, just all of these things. And then preparing for her death, which I really wasn't prepared for. I mean, can you really prepare for that? So, but during that time, something else was happening quietly in the background, like the simmer pots I make every spring, summer, winter, and fall. You know, these things I do to, it's so funny. I do these things to mark the seasons and to mark the passages of time. Like on the first of the month, I do an abundance ritual where I blow cinnamon into the house and I say these things and I clean the houses. And I do that to like mark that moment in time. And then, like I said, in the change of the seasons, I make simmer pots, right? I'm always engaged in some kind of ritual to mark time. And yet, I entered perimenopause with no preparation, no celebration, and no ritual. I don't even think I had a language for it. I mean, I just wasn't thinking about it, you know? It was literally like one day I was at a conference and I just started getting hot flashes. And that was, I would say, in, that must have been around, I don't know, 2018 or so, 2018, 2019. And that was kind of it. I got hot flashes and I was like, oh, okay, something's happening. But again, I just didn't really follow it up. And nobody told me what it looks like for a Black woman carrying intergenerational trauma, responsibility, and a lifetime of overfunctioning. Like nobody told me that this would happen. But what I did have were symptoms. I did have symptoms. Like I would have these explosive fits of rage, seemingly out of nowhere, screaming, crying in my house. My blood would like boil on like very mundane customer service interactions. I would feel my blood get to boil before the service agent even came on the phone. And I was like, what is that? Like, I just don't get it. My thoughts started racing and my patience was vanishing. And I was like, is this cortisol? Is this depression? Am I just like enraged because of my situation, the situation that I was in? Is this exhaustion from work and caregiving and stress? Like, I really did not know what was happening. My mom and I never talked about menopause. She overprepared me for my period. Like, she sat me down. She told me what to expect. You know, I'm of the age where we had these weird, like, strappy contraptions that we would put the pads in, and then we'd have to, like, step into this belt that would, like, clamp. Or it was something else. So she took me to buy that, and, like, yeah, I was overly prepared for it. But menopause was never mentioned. And even when I went through my fibroid journey the first time, she never really talked about it. Like, it was just a weird tension. And I don't know if it's because I was always, like, reading everything and, like, you know, I had taken control of my health in my 20s, and I was so, like, vigilant about what I was eating and, like, all of those things, that maybe she felt like I wouldn't listen to her. It could have been that, honestly. It could have been that she thought I wouldn't listen to what she had to say. I don't know. I mean, because I think they just called it the change of life, right? They just called it the change of life. But I think also, when I think about it, I wonder if it's because she really was thrust into early menopause. And I don't know if anybody talked to her about it. So she had told me this story once about how she had these quote unquote growths in her uterus, right? And she was very young, like extremely young. And she had these growths in her uterus, and the doctor kind of intimated that it was from, like, sex that she had as a young girl, like, kind of shamed her for having sex, I guess, before marriage, and was like, oh, this is why you have this, right? And I just think it was fibroids. And so, because he was like, oh, it could be cancerous. But here's the thing. He was going on vacation and he removed my mother's uterus before the test results came back. Because again, we're talking, I mean, I'm in my 50s. So this is a long time ago, right? This is like the 60s. So I don't know how long it took results to come back then, but clearly he didn't have time to wait. So he just took my mother's uterus out, okay, went on his vacation, called her when he got back, and basically was like, the results came in, you don't have, they wasn't cancerous. Now, the reason why I think it's fibroids is because that's what fibroids are. They're like non-cancerous, right? Cysts, growths, whatever they're called, like tumors, whatever they're called, in your body. And for me, when I got diagnosed, when I was living in Tallahassee, Florida, I had to go to, what, three doctors. And all they had to sell me was hysterectomies. That's it. That's all they wanted to do. Hysterectomy. I mean, one doctor even said to me, well, are you going to use this uterus? He just kept saying, this uterus. I was like, what? And then I don't want that. And so I'm like, I just want them removed. Well, at that time, I really didn't even want them removed, to be honest. I wanted to go the holistic route. So I talked to them about, like, are there any herbs I can take? They laughed in my face. And then one says, well, I could give you what's called a myomectomy, but you could go to sleep and wake up without your uterus. So I was like, these people are crazy. And I know my history. Like, I know they love to sterilize black and brown. Like, I know that. Okay. And so I was like, huh, this isn't going to work for me. I'm in Florida. Every single doctor is talking about, you know, removing my uterus. And then the last doctor I went to was a black woman. And she was like, well, she listened to me talk about my herbs. She was not rude. She was very honest. She was like, I don't really know anything about what you're talking about, but I will do my research and I will get back to you. Because basically what happened was I had gone a year. So I got diagnosed with fibroids. I tried to deal with it holistically, but when I went back for my gyno, they had grown. So that's when they started talking hysterectomy. So I had a full year of just like trying to do it on my own, talking to my uterus, like asking it for forgiveness, taking spiritual baths. I went on this extremely like restrictive diet that my acupuncturist had put me on because I was going to acupuncture. Like I was just doing everything. And I think I just had waited too long because when they were taken out, one of them did have necrosis. So it was like getting smaller. So I do believe that the herbs were doing something, but one of them was just too big. Like my fibroids were so big. One of them was like cutting into my intestine, not slicing, but like pressing up against my intestine so that I couldn't even defecate properly. Right. And my uterus was the size of like a 6-month pregnancy. So quite large. So very traumatic. Very, very, very traumatic. And when I would talk to my mom about it, she just didn't have a lot to say. You know, poor baby. She just was super quiet because what can she say, right? She went through it too. So I get to this black doctor, tell her about the year I had. I tell her about my herbs. She's like, okay, I'll study, whatever, whatever. But there was something about her demeanor that she went over my options. And she was like, I can do the myomectomy. And I booked the myomectomy that day. And I was signed up for surgery within, I want to say like 3 weeks to a month. Because I trusted her. I instantly trusted her. It was just like her demeanor, her care. She was like one of the best in the state. And I trusted her. So my mom flew down for my surgery and stayed with me while I was healing. Then we went to my cousin Michelle's house in Atlanta. I finished healing there. And that really was the beginning of a new life for me when I was healing from that fibroid surgery. That fibroid surgery really made me think about, I mean, living in Atlanta was really, really hard. And I really think they started to grow in Atlanta because I was so stressed and I was so depressed. And I was like eating fried food every single day because I was so depressed. And then I went to California to work. Then I went to Florida to work. And I was just like working my ass off. And I was just like, this doesn't make any sense. And I really felt like that the fibroids was like a result, quote unquote, of that for me, not for other people, for me. Okay. So, I had the myomectomy. Like I said, everything was fine. My healing was great. And shortly after that, I mean, I had surgery, I want to say in July. I took the full month of August off of work. I was working for the Florida Coalition. I took the full month off. And then I went back in September, like half time, and then I gave my notice and I left before my birthday. I left on October 1st, moved back to Connecticut, moved in with my mom with the intent of moving to New York City. Because I was like, I'm going to do what I want to do to make myself happy. So I moved to New York City. Once the fibroids were gone, I'd started an exercise routine, gotten myself healthier, and things were going really, really, really well. And but by the time the pandemic hit, I was back to overworking. Like I just went right back to my old habits, back to overworking, back to like eating things that weren't the best for my body. Went to the doctor. They were like, guess what? Your fibroids are back. It had been 10 years and the fibroids came back. And I had a cyst on my ovary and I was devastated. What did I do wrong? And then I just was like, you know what? I'm going to stop victimizing myself. I literally was driving home from the hospital. I was talking to my friend, Sherry. after I came from the hospital, just feeling so terrible. And then I just was like, you know what? I'm not going to victimize myself. Maybe I just have a body that produces fibroids. And that's that. Like, maybe that's it. And so they came back 2018, 2019, 2020, and some stuff happened and I'll talk about that on another episode. But basically, things were okay, but I had a very, very heavy cycle. Maybe I'll talk about it now. I guess I'll just talk about it now. So I had a really, really heavy cycle. It was the first day of Scorpio season. Yeah, it was the first day of Scorpio season. I had been bleeding since August, had not stopped. Super, super, super heavy. And I was going up the stairs and I was like out of breath. Like I could barely breathe. And I was like, this is so weird. So I called Sherry again. and she lived in New Jersey. I was in Brooklyn. And I was like, hey, can you come take me to the hospital? She was like, yeah, I can, of course, but I don't think you're going to make it. And I was like, what do you mean? Because of course I couldn't hear what I sounded like on the other end of the phone, but she obviously could. She's like, I think you need to call the ambulance. So I call the ambulance. They came, I met them outside. They looked at me and they were like, you're going to the hospital. So I don't know what I looked like, but they were like, you're going to the hospital now. So went upstairs, got some things. Mind you, the only surgery I ever had was the myomectomy. I'd never like spent the night in the hospital before that. I'd broken my leg when I was like in the sixth grade, and that was pretty much it. So I was like terrified because it's November 2020, so it's still COVID, right? But it was that time of COVID where things had like calmed down a little bit. I don't know if y'all remember that, like in the fall, things had like, and they were saying when the weather started to change, COVID was going to go down, and it had kind of done that, but it still was COVID, right? So I'm in this ambulance and they're taking me to a hospital that I don't want to be taken to. I get to the hospital. It's horrible. The people are mean. It was really bad. Like, I'm come to find out I had been hemorrhaging. They had no pads for me the next morning. I had to take, and ladies, you know what I'm talking about. The little piece of sheet that you lay on when you go to the gynecologist. That's what they gave me to put between my legs to take me downstairs to the next day. To get looked at. That's what they gave me. But then when I went downstairs, they gave me like a ton of pads. But yeah, it was just like so demoralizing. It was horrible. Many, many, many black women and children, black children have died in this hospital. Come to find out, I found out after I left. So after, I think I had three or four blood transfusions. And when I was leaving, because I had woken up and my hand was really swollen and my arm was swollen. I didn't know if it was from all the blood transfusions. I didn't know what it was from. I called the nurse. It's like 3 o'clock in the morning. She comes in and I'm like, can you do something? My hand is swollen. She literally lifts up my swollen hand, turns it over, laughs in my face, puts it back down, and leaves. So I'm crying. I'm alone because everybody's in Connecticut or they can't come into the hospital because, again, it's COVID. And I was like, I got to get out of this hospital. I'm going to die in this hospital. If I don't get out of this hospital, I'm going to die in this hospital. So they gave me my last blood transfusion. They came in that next morning and my levels were up, you know, because they were like, you can't leave until your levels get up. And so they came in that next morning. They were like, how are you? I was like, I'm great. I'm fine. Because again, I was like, I've got to get out of this hospital. I will die in this hospital. And I was getting used to being there because I'd been there like a week. And I was like, yeah, I got to get out. So the checkout comes and my family friend, Eric, he called and he was like, your mom told me, or maybe it was my uncle, that you're in the hospital. And I was like, yeah, I am. I'm getting out today. By the time I got dressed, Eric was in the hospital. Like I was like, how did you get in this hospital? He's like, don't worry about it. But as I'm being checked out, the nurse tells me that my levels, I can't remember if it was my hemoglobin, whatever it was, she was like, you are almost dead. Because you're supposed, my hemoglobin or something. Y'all tell me. It's supposed to be at like a 9 or a 10 or something. Mine was at like a 5, I think it was. And so she was like, yeah, you were on your way out of here. Shit. Holy shit. Like, that was like shocking. Like, I could have left without knowing that knowledge. But in a way, I was glad she said it. So anyway, so I go home. They give me birth control to stop the bleeding because I'm still bleeding. But at least I had the blood transfusion, but I'm still bleeding. Continued. They put me on a different kind of birth control. Mind you, I had gotten off birth control in my like 20s. Like I said, I had taken over my health in my 20s. I got off birth control. I was only on birth control for like 2 or 3 years. I was like, I'm getting off this shit. Stop eating meat. Like the whole thing. So for me to be like on birth control, nothing's working. Nothing's working. Nothing's working. So I went to Vermont to stay with friends. They took care of me. They cooked for me. I got to rest because they knew the stress that I was under with my mom as well. They were like, come here and sleep. So I went to my friend's palatial estate in Vermont, literally, no exaggeration. They took care of me for 3 weeks, but I was still bleeding. So I was like, okay, I need a different guy. I got a gynecologist, a different one that was at the hospital. Went to him. He was amazing. Shout out to my gynecologist at New York Presbyterian because he is the bomb. He had done medical work in Africa. We talked about the arts the first time we talked. He told me about his husband. He was so gentle. He was just so kind, so sweet. He put me on some stuff to stop the bleeding. And he's the one who said, there's a name for what you're going through, which I can't remember it now. He's like, but basically, it's your period's last hurrah. That's my words, not his. He's like, your body is in between letting go and going to the next phase of life. And I was like, holy shit. That for me, like spiritually, metaphysically, it just made so much sense because he's like, yeah, your body's just not quite ready to let go. But I can give you this stuff. And it was some kind of acid and it stopped the bleeding immediately. It was painful though, like painful, horrible cramps, horrible, 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 horrible cramps. But I took it for 2 weeks. And after those 2 weeks, it was a wrap. It was done. And so that was everything that was happening, right? On this menopause journey. It's not even a menopause journey. Maybe it's just like a lady parts journey. So, like I said, he's amazing. So, stop the bleeding. I was going to have an ablation to get rid of the fibroids. I had the appointment, but again, I don't know if you remember 2021 where COVID kicked up again. And so, the doctor who was going to do the surgery, he was like, I am inundated with COVID situations. I cannot do this surgery, blah, 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 blah. I was like, fine, the bleeding has stopped anyway. So, whatever, whatever, whatever. No harm, no foul. It's all good. So it's all good now. I'm feeling better, right? But obviously went right back to caretaking. And I was like, I don't have time to like really think about menopause. Then I went to this event. I got invited to this event from this, you know, really menopause activist named Omasade. And she created the Black Girls Guide to Surviving Menopause podcast, I believe it was called. And she was having an event in New York. So I went to that event. I can't remember if it was 2022 or 2023. I can't remember. But when I went, I was like, damn, I am not doing menopause right. I'm like, I'm clearly because I had, oh yeah, it was 2023 because I had stopped bleeding. So I had stopped bleeding. So I was like, damn, I missed it. Because apparently menopause is like one day. It's like the day, the year to the day that you have your last bleed. So I went to this event, met another amazing menopause activist, author named Mona. She wrote a book about menopause. She was writing like an anthology. And I was like, damn, these ladies are really doing menopause well. They're working out, they're lifting weights. Meanwhile, I'm just like, whatever. And then when I thought about it, I was like, wow, maybe it's just like what my doctor said, you know, it's like I was in between letting go and going to the next phase. Cause low key, I was grieving the younger woman that I was. I was like, damn, like I'm not gonna be like the young thing no more. I was grieving my body. My body was changing. The sexual identity I had. I was like, oh my God, I'm not going to be just like that sexy young girl anymore. Just like, I really was just like grieving the part of myself that felt desirable. I was like, I'm just going to be like an old lady. But meeting Mona and meeting, you know, and going to that event, I was like, okay, let me at least like try to figure this thing out. So call my doctor again, who I love. And I was like, hey, I want to get tested. And he's like, for what? I'm like, for menopause. Like, I want to see if I'm in menopause. I get tested. He calls me back. And all he says is, yep, you're in menopause. Okay. Is there anything else you got for me? Nope. You're in menopause. And this is my amazing doctor. But I didn't have time to be mad at anything because by then my mom's health was deteriorating. So I just was like, whatever, whatever, whatever. So then last year I had a new primary care physician, and this place, another amazing medical group in New York. They started out mainly servicing sex workers. And then I guess they expanded to just take anybody and everybody. Great facility. It's just a great, great, great facility. However, my primary care physician doctor came in and I was like, hey, I got tested by my gynecologist. I am in menopause. I have mood swings. I have weight gain. I have no energy. What do you have for me? And this young woman, she had to be in her 30s. Because at first I also was like, is it stress? Is it caregiving? Is it, you know, is it COVID? Like, what is it? You know, what is it? And it could have been all those freaking things, right? She just looks blank in the face and she's like, well, I can give you antidepressant medicine and I can give you sleeping pills. Just like, I don't really want to take antidepressant meds. And I don't really want to take sleeping pills either. Like, that just doesn't feel like that's what I need. But I think what was so fascinating to me was that she just, and this is like a, I don't even know what to call them, like a forward thinking group. This is as I said, they started out working with sex workers. Like, they do like domestic violence stuff, trans health, like they do all of the things except, like, the look she gave me was just kind of like, yeah, I just don't know. Like, she didn't know. She didn't know. And I'm like, girl, you're going to go through this in a few years. And I think I probably said that to her too, actually. I think I probably was like, you know, you're going to go through this too, right? Like, I could see my male doctor, I guess. I mean, considering he's like older than her, he should have known, but whatever. Nobody knows. So that was last year. So I just went back to my life, right? Dealing with my mom. Y'all already know that story. So this past October, last month, because, you know, I had to change my insurance and change everything because I was in a different state. And I specifically asked for a Black, you know, woman gynecologist, which I got. And so last month I go into the doctor's office, and let me just say this too, going into the doctor's office. So I specifically wanted UConn because UConn was what my mom had for years and they treated her so well. I just like love UConn so much. And so I was like, I just want to be in the UConn health system. And so I am, thank goodness. I got so lucky. But going there triggers me. Like, going there activates me because it's still so fresh. Like, even when I see like younger daughters or a daughter or daughters my age with their moms, like going into stores or just whatever, it activates me. Even when I see elderly people walking slowly, it activates me. When I see ambulances, it activates me still. So, and I had taken my mom, like the same facilities that I'm going to, except for where I get my mammograms. They're the same facilities that I took my mom to. So it's a lot. And it was my second birthday without my mom. It was like literally 2 days before my birthday last month. So I'm sitting in her office, and before she even gets in there, I'm just like, you know, welling up. The tears are just coming. I'm getting so emotional. And she walks in and she's like, definitely in my age range or maybe a little bit older. She's got short twists, you know. She's got her sneakers on, you know. She's just like jazzy. And I was like, okay, cool, cool. And she's not like overly friendly. It's so funny because I was like, okay, I guess we're not going to be like braiding each other's hair. But she like knows her stuff. And yeah, she just knows her stuff, you know. And so she's just asking me very basic, like very benign questions. And I am just like crying, just like crying. And so, and just telling her, you know, some of what I've gone through. And she's very sympathetic, empathetic. And then she says to me, which is like the crux of this whole story, like completely buried the lead here. Have you ever thought of hormone replacement therapy? Now, when I think of hormone replacement therapy, I am Gen X. I think of Suzanne Summers. And I think of these horror stories about hormone replacement therapy giving people cancer. And also, I'm not a medication girl. Like I said earlier, like I stopped taking medication in my 20s. So it has been like just pure herbs and that's it. Diet and exercise for like 30 years. And then me falling off, like getting off track. But I have not had any health problems except for this feminine stuff, right? The fibroids. That's been like my main issue. So I wasn't looking for, I'm just like not, like a lot of the older women I know too, who went through menopause before me, they just did herbal stuff. They just made teas and did stuff. And so that's what I said to her. And she's like, yeah, but, I mean, she didn't say yeah, but she's a professional. But she was like, that teas and diet are not going to put estrogen back in your body. You are losing estrogen. And when you lose estrogen, it impacts lots and lots of things. So she's like, I didn't have hot flashes, right? So I was like, I don't have hot flashes. I don't have vaginal dryness. I don't really have night sweats. If I do get hot at night, I just take off all my clothes and I'm fine. So that was the other piece why I kind of just felt like I was floating through. I wasn't like connecting my mood and that the weight gain, I wasn't really connecting it, and nobody was helping me connect it either. So she's like, yeah, that's not all that menopause is. It's not just mood swings, vaginal dryness, and hot flashes. And I was like, oh. She's like, yeah, no. She's like, it's also bone loss. It's also cardiovascular disease, and you're Black. It's also diabetes. And I was like, oh. And she's like, so an HRT can help with those things. So, and weight gain. But, oh, and sleep, insomnia too. But I always have had insomnia. So I was like, I've been had insomnia. So I've been not sleeping since a kid. But she's like, but it can help with that as well. So I was like, holy shit. So my mood started to lift. And I left her office with like a feeling that I haven't experienced in so long, which was like hope. Like the feeling I felt with her was the feeling I felt when I decided to get my fibroid surgery. And so I went home. I immediately started like Googling hormone replacement therapy. Of course, she gave me the pamphlet. I was looking at all of the different types. And then I went on different YouTube forums to see what women were saying about it and listening to different, you know, not podcasts, but just watching different videos of women and things like that. Then I started asking the women in my life about hormone replacement. I was like, hey, I'm thinking about getting hormone replacement therapy. Mind you, today is November 30th, okay? My doctor's appointment was October 8th. So, like, I'm doing my research. I'm like, yo, I'm thinking about this hormone replacement therapy. And all my friends are woo-woo like me. So here I am thinking they're like on the anti-hormone replacement train like me. They're like, girl, I've been on that. They're like, I've been on it. I had one friend. She's like, it was the best 5 years of my life. Like, I just started hearing all the, I'm like, I can't believe I have not had access to this fucking information. But we get our information when we need to. So anyway, so now I'm like, I'm sold. I'm reading the, you know, all the things that can happen, the side effects. My doctor told me as well, because again, I have fibroids. So I'm like, fuck, is this estrogen gonna make my fibroids grow? Blah, blah, blah. And there is a chance of that. There is a chance of that. But I was like, I'm going to try it anyway. I'm going to just like take a chance and see what happens. So the other thing I did was I joined a monthly menopause group. And it's called the Menopositive Cafe. And so this Friday, we have our second meeting. Well, it's the second meeting for me at an actual cafe. And so the first meeting, we talked about like our moms and what our moms went through and like, whew, and just the way, again, treatments are just kept from women and the misinformation. And so by the time I got back to Montreal, after my doctor's visit, I was like, I'm not waiting. So it wasn't even the time that's not even true. So I met with my doctor. Like I said, she gave me the pamphlet. I left her office. I got my eyebrows done. I came back and I said, I don't have to wait for my follow-up. I don't have to wait until next year for my follow-up for the menopause, because I kind of told the nurse. She was like, oh God, no. She was like, don't wait. So literally left my doctor's office, went next door, got my eyebrows done, came back to the doctor's office and made my follow-up appointment for November 4th. I was like, I'm not fucking waiting. Fuck that. Excuse my language. So came back to Montreal, celebrated my birthday. Went to the Menopause Cafe like a couple of weeks later and really felt like I had armed myself with a lot of information by the time I went back to my doctor on November 4th. Got my prescription. It came a couple of days later. Got on it immediately. I did have to get progesterone as well because I still have a uterus. So you have to take progesterone with the estrogen. So got on my regimen. And so we are now at the 3-week mark. By the time you hear this podcast, I will have been on hormone replacement therapy for 5 weeks. So they say results vary from person to person. But I can tell you that my sleep has improved tremendously. My mood has improved tremendously. Now, the other thing I did because of the menopausative group, there are some nurses in that group who are in their 60s. And one of them talked about she takes magnesium. So I made a new friend here in Montreal and she was like, oh yeah, I heard about that. But there's a specific kind of magnesium that you need. She told me, I went home to Connecticut. I got it. I got my magnesium. I got, you know, when I went home, I got everything I needed. Got my little HRC. So I take magnesium glycinate in the afternoon because that actually helps with cortisol. And then I take magnesium citrate at night. And that also helps with sleep and to cleanse my system. And then I started doing my vitamins again. Got back on my vitamins. And yeah, I'm feeling okay. I joined a dance studio. It'll be 3 weeks by the time you hear this message. So I am dancing. I take Latin fusion on Sundays. I took a burlesque class. I didn't like it. The people were kind of rude. So yeah, burlesque. I'm doing Pilates. I'm doing a lot of dance hall, Zumba, ballet. I'm doing a bunch of things. And some days I walk to the studio and take classes and walk back. Some of the classes are a couple of hours apart on the same day because I was like, I have to be active throughout the winter because last winter was really rough because I was in the house. And so it's hard, you know, it is hard. I mean, I felt a little bit of dizziness the first few days, but otherwise that's pretty much all of my symptoms. I do take two rest days from working out. So on those days, I've started walking around my neighborhood doing at least like 30 minutes of walking. I've started cooking more at home, making smoothies again, getting my nuts in, cleaning my kitchen before I go to bed. Just like little habits, like cleaning my house weekly, dusting, just kind of like getting back to activities that I used to do before. Now, I can't say that I'm back to the person that I was. I don't want to go back to her. I couldn't even if I wanted to, and I don't. But I'm really happy with the small changes that I'm making. So, yeah, I will keep you posted on my hormone replacement therapy. But I'm feeling good. You know, the sleeping is like nice, sleeping through the night. Because before I would wake up, go to sleep, wake up, go to sleep. So basically I'll take my magnesium because that's also good for calming. It's not just good for like helping you go to the bathroom, but it's also really calming. And it doesn't interact with the progesterone. But I still do it like an hour apart. And the other thing is I start to go to bed earlier. So I'm usually like in bed by like 10:30, which is crazy for me. And I usually drift off between like 11 o'clock, 11:30, and I'm sleeping through the night. Like I'm not waking up like I was. And so that feels really, really good because the progesterone is good for sleep as well. And so those are the things that I'm doing. And I'm starting to feel good. Like, yeah. And I feel like I'm starting to look better. I got my hair done the other day and I was like, wow, I really like my hair. Like when she blew my hair, I was like, wow, my hair really looks healthy. Like, so I'm just really starting to feel myself a little bit. And so, yay. Oh, and then the other piece is, so I do have to go back for my follow-up. And when you go back for your follow-up, they see if the estrogen is enough to raise your levels or if you need a little testosterone. Now, I want that testosterone. I'm a little concerned about the hair on my chinny chin chin. Like I'm a little concerned about turning into Aunt Bunny with the testosterone. And she did say there's a chance that could happen, but I just need a little jolt of that testosterone. Cause it's like, I want that, like me and my friend, we were talking about like a hot tea summer. Like I want a hot tea summer. I want a hot testosterone summer. I want that more energy, more energy, more energy, more passion, more passion. So I do want the testosterone. I hope I get it. Even if I just get a little smidge. So yeah, that's my menopause story. And my fibroid story. I guess it's like my vagina monologue. And I want to hear your menopause story too. Or your fibroid journey. I mean, I know, listen, most of the people I know got fibroids. So if you want to share your fibroid journey with me, you can. If you have other questions about like what I'm taking, the dosage and all of that, just let me know. You know, you can email me at info@iamzoeflowers.com. If you want to share your menopause journey, your perimenopause journey, you know, the main thing I'm learning is that our bodies deserve our attention and there are people who can help us give it to ourselves, give our body what it needs, right? There are people who can help, right? The medical industry is not perfect. Lord knows I was very anti-medical, but there are some good doctors out there and we just have to do our due diligence and, you know, just make sure of what we're getting and research and pay attention to our bodies, you know? Yeah. So that's it. Thank you for coming to The Brink with me today. Thank you for listening to this part of my story. And as always, please share your stories with me. Let me know if this resonates and know that no one deserves to stand, right? I will be back very soon. You know, episodes drop every Tuesday at 7:11 EST, with some episodes dropping on Fridays. I don't know if I'll be doing the bonus episodes since we're in the holiday season. But yeah, you can find me on Apple Podcasts, anywhere that podcasts are available. And as always, I am Zoe Flowers, and I will talk to you soon. Bye.